I'm Mark Hennick. This is So-Called Normal.
Hey folks, welcome to So-Called Normal. I'm Mark Hennick. Today on the show, I'm going to be talking with Dave Trafford because we're on an off week here. So Dave, how are you?
I'm all right. As well as you can be in an off week, I guess.
As on as you could be when you're off, yeah. Yes. Yeah. So next week, we've got another full episode of So-Called Normal coming up. We're doing these little normal episodes in between. And next week, we have Thomas coming up. Thomas tells us his story about working in the restaurant industry in particular. I mean, we cover a lot of ground, but that was the piece that really stood out for me, his carrying the stress of the restaurant industry. And maybe that applies to the retail industry more broadly.
Well, you know, the story becomes all the more poignant now when we see the stress that the whole industry is under, given COVID-19, and the chambers of commerce looking at these numbers and saying, you know what, if we're lucky, only 60% of the restaurants in this country are going to go out of business before the end of the calendar year. So to hear Thomas's story only sort of amplifies, I think, what that we're talking about, a second wave, get ready for it. But I think probably the most poignant part of it was like he was just running full speed ahead, and then, you know, figuratively he hits that brick wall and down he goes. It was just almost out of the blue.
Yeah, you know, that's really what stood out to me too, is that I think that every industry, of course, is under pressure right now in the current circumstance, especially the restaurant industry, where everything, I can't imagine how they can possibly be profitable in this kind of environment like any other business. But even prior to this, there'd been stories of a mental health crisis among folks in the restaurant industry. It was only just a couple of weeks ago that the celebrity chef David Chang from Momofuku fame announced in his memoirs coming out, and he had a really interesting piece in it about his own experiences with depression. He opens up about his experiences with depression, bipolar disorder, suicidal thoughts, and he says in the book that mental illness is woven into most of his adulthood, that it plays into both his failures, but also his successes, which I thought was really interesting when we think about Thomas's story too, right? That that there's a certain, you know, it's easy because it's so awful to experience protracted depression and anxiety and suicidal thinking. But there's something special, I find, that comes out of it, too. I don't know if anybody who's never been there can understand that, but I certainly relate to that.
Well, one of the things that strikes me about Thomas's story to that point is there is this, he's good at what he does. And he kind of is one of these guys, and I know many, I mean, I'll stand in line and say guilty. You take for granted sometimes what you're good at. And when it doesn't happen well around you, all of a sudden that just raises the anxiety level, not just for you, but for other people around you, because your expectations are driven by your own ability to do what might be a complicated job relatively easily. So you saw a little bit of that with Thomas in his storytelling, that he was having a hard time. Not only were other people having a hard time keeping up with his expectations, he was having, a difficult time keeping up with his own.
Yeah, and I can certainly relate to that as well. And I think that I don't know if non-creative people experience this too, but I think it's the curse of creativity in some ways, is having these impossibly high standards and sometimes thinking in a way that, you know, you don't always appreciate that not everybody is inside your head, that not everybody can see the non-linear way in which you're thinking. And you know, maybe high pressure situations, the restaurant industry, namely, and media being another one, these are situations that bring this out. You know, you've been in the media industry now for 30 plus years. You must have encountered lots of creative types who live by different rules, right?
Oh, entirely. Big personalities, you know, in front of the mic, and you walk them out of the studio and they're, you know, just a bag of nerves. And it was a difficult thing all of a sudden, especially when ratings are so driven by that your own personality. And it, as much as knowledge, you would try to tell them to know it's a team effort. If somebody's name is on the show, they take full responsibility for the perfection around it. And it was a real hard thing sometimes to get people to get to the point where, you know what, excellent is okay.
Yeah. So what is it then about those people? And I think to an extent, I'm one of them in a way, where there almost needs to be a certain pressure to click on, that you can't just turn it on, that like you say, when you're off mic or off camera or out of the restaurant or whatever, you're a different person. But you derive a certain energy, almost become addicted to the energy in a way that keeps you coming back. It fills some need in you. You know, what's going on there? Why do some people thrive in super stressful situations where they need the spotlight on?
Well, I don't have the expertise or the insights that you have, certainly. But as I watch this, I have found that those who are probably most successful in those fields are those who can compartmentalize. And you know, in the media industry, I remember reading an essay by Peter Zosky years ago, and he would say, when I am Peter Zosky in the studio, it's a different one than it's outside the studio. And in fact, when he was in front of the microphone, he was playing a role of Peter Zosky. So, and I kind of took that to heart, and I realized, yeah, I kind of do that myself. So that when I'm having a conversation here with you via the podcast or when we're on the radio together, it's a slightly different conversation than you and I will have off the air, but there's a different tone. There's a different feel to it. But this is what engages me. This is what drives me. I mean, you know, you said 30 years, you're being polite. I'm getting close to, you know, 40 years doing this job. And there are many days when you kind of look and say, what the hell am I, was I thinking? Because it can be that there's a level of stress and when you're off the air. But boy, when you're in there, that's the elixir that kind of gets you up.
Well, and I think part of it too is that if you don't, you have to maintain, I think, those two gears in some way, because you take, I'm an introvert, but I take a lot of energy from doing the extrovert stuff, but I can't imagine doing it every day nonstop all the time, because I need to take time to unplug. And I think that comes from having done it for a few years now, realizing that these are two aspects of myself and I need to shift between those two gears, but they're still two versions of me. I think if you don't realize that and you keep trying to compartmentalize too much and you don't offset that high energy compartment with a lower energy compartment to kind of balance things out, that's where we get burnout. That's where we get people who are, whether, I don't know if it's a midlife crisis or a crisis of some kind, of realizing, you know, I don't know who I am anymore. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of it too. And it sounds like Thomas experienced a bit of that crash in some ways, where it just wasn't sustainable. The amount of time he was putting in, the amount of effort that he was putting in, just the mechanics of the restaurant industry alone were pretty grueling, and it didn't sound like he was able to really balance that out in a healthy way.
Well, one of the lines that really struck me was, and I think the way you set it up was, you know, this was all kind of cooking along. There was some challenges and everything else, but all of a sudden, just on one day, and it was supposed to be a day at the beach with his kids, and he hadn't had a day off in a long period of time. And he just gets to the beach and the kids are ready to go. And he gets this call and says, you know, either somebody's called in sick or whatever the case may be. Gets to pack the car up and take the kids back, and all of a sudden it goes. And you know, there are lots of industries that are like that right now, that it's, you know, sort of pay as you play sort of thing. And media or service industries particularly, you know, I mean, think of people right now in the healthcare industry where there are shortages. And I know you just did a double, but can you have a quick turnaround and come back in, because we've got, you know, real need here. Those things are happening in plain view more so now than ever, I think.
Well, there's the ask, and I think that's where managers often, you know, they see a need in front of them. Their business need kind of trumps, at least in the short term, the humanity or the empathetic concerns. But then they I don't think put themselves in the shoes of the other person. But then I guess the other side of it too, though, is that the other person doesn't want to say no, right? They want to be seen as a good employee, as a team player. Maybe they need the extra money. There's all kinds of reasons why people don't say no, even though they know maybe that it's going to push them over their limit.
Well, part of it is also, and you know, I've been there. Okay, you know what? It's just easier if I go in. Rather than picking up the phone or chasing somebody else down or trying to solve it remotely, you just leave me alone. I'll go and do it myself. And there's a certain, you know, approach to that that says it's not going to get done any better unless I go and do it. So, and there was a little bit in Thomas's story there of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that even comes back to the creative personality type, too, is that there's a certain control element there. Right. And I experience this all the time. In grad school, I remember having this revelation when we were studying attachment theory and this idea of how kids who grow up, we didn't really get into this with Thomas, but I'm thinking of it now. Kids who grow up without a whole lot of caregiving or without a stable caregiving environment, they learn to take care of themselves, essentially. And as an offshoot of that, as they become adults, they start to adapt that mindset of if you want something done right, do it yourself. Because that's all they knew. That's what they had to do. They had to develop that sense of control over their environment, that if this is going to be the way I need it to be, then I need to make it that way. Now, the problem with that, of course, entirely speaking from personal circumstance, is that you don't control the world. You can't necessarily control everything. So then you set yourself up often for some pretty difficult falls.
Now, you know, to suggest that in some cases it's negative. On the other hand, you know, it just drives the kind of personalities that we are in desperate need of right now, vis-a-vis the pandemic, because those are the entrepreneurial brains that we're talking about now, right? These are people who've said, okay, I see that there's an obstacle here, but I to hell with it. I'm going to blow him right through this wall because I'm going to get the job done. So there's two edges to that.
You know, and it doesn't make you many friends, I'll tell you that other edge. But I relate to that so much. And it's this idea, you're right. And it comes back to that idea that what is the almost the benefit of having that kind of struggle, because it is a struggle, that I don't think the majority of people are that way. The majority of people, in my impression of it anyway, just wants to do what they're told. And I've yearned for this too. Can I just please get a job where somebody tells me where to be and what to do, and I leave and go home and don't have to think about it until I come in again? Yeah. Like that's just such a nice, comfortable environment. Unfortunately, there are a few people out there in the world, I think, who don't fit that mold and who need to grab the situation and make it into something else. So, you know, it is a blessing and a curse. And I think we do hear a lot of that in Thomas's story. And, you know, now he's a really wonderful advocate for mental health, speaking about something that I think a lot of people can relate to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great story.
Well, so Thomas is coming up next week. Folks can subscribe to So-Called Normal on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, where we put them up on YouTube and all my social media platforms as well, at Mark Kenick on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, everywhere else. Dave Trafford brings the episodes together for us. Dave, thank you so much.
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too. Take care.
This episode of So-Called Normal is brought to you by an educational grant from Janssen, Inc. Mark Hennick and the producers of So-Called Normal are solely responsible for the content of the episode, and the views and opinions expressed in this episode do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Janssen, Inc. The podcast content is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition, product, or treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have read or seen in this podcast episode.